إبراهيم فكير، السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. ويلكم.
وعليكم السلام ورحمة الله وبركاته. And شكرا فعلاً again مرة أخرى.
Always a pleasure to talk to you. So another week in the themes of unethical malgovernance continue in our public, political and governance life. Some surprises emerged this week. Sometimes it even seems as if it is difficult to separate fact from fiction. Conflicting narratives of the same facts and incidents seem to take on wildly different meanings and significances. In part, this is due to social media and the spread of fake news and crafted narratives, some of it scarcely believable, but some of which we witnessed with our very eyes if we were watching the Zondo Commission the previous week, in which President Zuma and his advocate argued for Justice Zondo to recuse himself from the commission by advancing what seemed like spurious arguments and then proceeded to simply walk out. This week we had revelations about Jeff Mahubo, current mayor of Johannesburg, who was the member of the Municipal Council for Finance and the treasurer of the ANC for the Johannesburg region, as well as Zizi Kodwa, former spokesperson for the ANC and current Deputy Minister of Intelligence, being on the receiving ends of payment from the IT company EOH. Some of it solicited as donations for the ANC by Jeff Mahubo. Related to this matter also is the question of funding of the CR17 campaign, that is Ramaphosa's 2017 bid for the ANC presidency, which was heard in the Constitutional Court yesterday. One recalls that this is an issue that the public protector sought to investigate. It is perceived as part of the factional battles within the ANC, in which the Office of State, the public protector, is being used to fight. So, Ibrahim, it seems there is a link between what we hear emerging in the Zondo Commission and with respect to the funding of Ramaphosa's private campaign. Are there deeper problems here?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Other than the fact that, you know, we've got completely unethical governance, no respect for the rules, impunity and unaccountability. Of course, the more extreme manifestation was the way in which Zuma behaved when he was in office and the way in which he's been treating the Zondo Commission. But the deeper parallels with this also refer to things like raising money for parties. So you see how Jeff Mahubo is accused, or it appears as if he was soliciting money from EOH, which is this IT company, as you say. And saying to them, if you want X contracts, or sometimes it seems as if after a contract was awarded, he'd call and tap them for money, apparently, which was for the ANC. Now, whether it went to the ANC or not, we don't know. In all likelihood, it did, or at least a portion of it did. Clearly it's a case of party financing, right? Sometimes it go directly into people's pockets. Sometimes it loops back to the party one way or the other. It's corrupt ways. It's not outright fraud, let's put it that way. Or it's not, in some instances, not complete and outright corruption. But it is still unethical, and it still goes against procurement rules, goes against the tender rules, and it goes against sometimes the basic ethics. Now, we understand parties need money. Of course, they're going to solicit donations and stuff. But here, it seems as if there was a clear link made between saying you get a contract in exchange for giving us money. Now, of course, that kind of palm greasing, at least for a party in government, is not uncommon around the world. Of course, it's the way in which it goes. But what's the relationship between that and so party funding, but funding of personal campaigns within a political party? And perhaps that's where the parallels are, right? So remember, Ramaphosa is accused of having had the CR17 campaign inside the ANC, and they raised lots of money. Some say corruptly, some say there are people on the payroll, some say it was to dole out money to ANC members who were attending the NASREC conference in 2017 to vote for President Ramaphosa, as opposed to, remember, his rival at the time, Nkosazana Dlamini, Zuma, who apparently was a proxy for Zuma. So that's where it comes in. Now, on the one hand, money which is raised for political parties, in part, that that problem has been curbed by putting in place this party funding law for private funding. Because remember, before it was completely unregulated, right? Now, Ramaphosa signed into law a act which says any party which receives a donation from a private source over 100,000 rand has to disclose it. So there's disclosure. But there's no disclosure of an individual who is raising money, not in the name of the party, but in the name of his or her own campaign inside a political party. So in effect, that's going for private office in a private entity. Because I think we envisage parties as private entities. And so the public protector, remember, as part of this factional battles, people said, yes, this CR17 campaign was corrupt. And remember the REP faction in the factional battles of the ANC claim that, why are you going for us? This is part of the whole factional divide in the ANC, and you're victimizing us. And you will only seen as not being victimizing us if you open up the books of those CR17 donations. And their argument is, well, there's no law which is compelling us to do that, number one. Number two, there's no requirement to do so because this is about a private campaign in a private entity, someone who's a private person going for office inside a private political party, and they use that to campaign inside the party. So there's no need to open that up. And that's what they're sticking at, and the public protector apparently is being used in this regard to say, open it up because I've been told as the public protector that there was some corruption in the way in which not only this was raised, but how this connection of people or network of people in the CR17 campaign benefit further from state contracts or from immunization from prosecution, and largely there may also be corrupt relationships in that people are still getting procurement and tender awards because of their contribution to this. Now, the private argument makes sense to a certain extent. It made sense to a certain extent. But Cyril Ramaphosa, at the time he was going for office in the ANC, had nothing to do with us as a public. It's about ANC members inside the ANC. But here's the nub of the problem. And this is what the Constitutional Court is now going to hear from yesterday and will disaggregate. At the time Ramaphosa did this, he wasn't a private citizen like you or I. He was holding elected office, not just in the ANC, but in the state. Remember, he was deputy president of Zuma, Morana. So he was deputy president and therefore should be governed by the Executive Members Ethics Act, which is all members of the executive have certain obligations to disclose what money they get and whether it's money for pursuing campaigns or otherwise. So they have to declare that. Now, his argument would be, but this was created as an account, and this account was kept completely outside of my control, and it was run by people at arm's length, by people who had nothing to do with me as Deputy President of the Republic. Now, how clearly what it points to is that we need much better regulation of private money in political parties, whether it's for parties overall as entities and as organizations, or whether it's for individuals inside the party who are going for certain political office.
Mm-hmm. Now, related to money woes, it is clear that the SABC saga is not going away anytime soon. It keeps taking twists and turns. The so-called retrenchments are off for now, it seems. The board is still split, and now it seems consultations with staff and other labor experts are ongoing. What's really the issue, and what's really at stake here, Brian?
Basically, you know, what is at stake is public education, public information, and entertainment. The SABC has lost credibility in its programming, in its news, in all of those offerings. And yeah, of course, you know, people are going to go on, it's about money, it's about corruption, they've had bailouts. As a public broadcaster, which has a public mandate, it has a board which is arm's length from the shareholder, which is government and others who should be running the place with sound management. Of course, government has an influence as one of the stakeholders, as a major stakeholder, and they're continuously providing bailouts as they do for a whole range of other entities. And yet, you know, the problems don't seem to persist. And again, now the board came up with certain ideas about what to do to make it more sustainable, and people are resisting it, understandably, because their jobs are at stake. But here's the question people refuse to ask. Yes, of course, it's worth saving the public broadcaster. We must have a public broadcast, but then it must do public broadcasting. There's no point saving something which isn't in fact doing public broadcasting, and they haven't been doing public broadcasting for a range of reasons. I would say three. One, interference from government. So it's not been more a public broadcaster, it's been more a state broadcaster or a government broadcaster. So first problem, intervention and meddling where you're not supposed to meddle, first. Second is, of course, money. And money is that there's a bloated structure, there are too many people earning far too high salaries with very little to show in return with regard to productivity. And we've spoken about this before, that we've got a public service in which levels of productivity are just far too low. And then third, because of you've got low productivity, low supervision, bad oversight inside the organization, people getting away with not doing what they're supposed to do, coupled with political interference, you know, it's not surprising that you end up with the kind of problems that you do.
Finally, we're almost out of time, Ibrahim, but a quick word on the whole Bushiri saga. I mean, coincidentally, the Malawian delegation was in South Africa at the same time. They are being fingered because he reportedly gave a lot of his personal money towards the campaign of the current Malawian president. We know we have porous borders, but it seems odd that one can slip out that easily and undetected, surely. Is it even possible to make sense of all of this?
No, I think there's only one way you can think about this. Well, one of two ways. Either if he's helped by whoever helped him, whether it's South Africans who helped him or high-ranking enough in politics, in the officials in borders or at the airport or whatever, it's either if they helped him, it's corruption. Not out-and-out corruption, because those rules would never apply to you or I. If it's not corruption and there's something else going on, a deeper level of manipulation, breaking the rules, then it's evil. So there's no other way of thinking of either he was helped and aided and it was corrupt, or and it's evil, or our systems are just so useless that he and his wife managed to alter their appearance, get new documents, and then slip out the country, which means that our institutions are useless, completely useless, not doing what they're supposed to do. So here's what a choice. Either you are useless and incompetent, or you are evil and malevolent. Imagine what a choice you are faced with.
Yeah. Ibrahim, as always, we really appreciate your analysis and your thoughts.
Shukran. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi
wa barakatuh. Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. That was this week's Asri Report with Ibrahim Fakir.